Okay, today we're going to start a new Mishnah on page Kuf Yud Dalet, page 114, side A, on the very bottom. In fact, that's the
114A.
That's the last lines on the page. The 114 side A concludes with the Mishnah. And a lot of the things that we learned in other classes, in Haggadah classes or in the Halacha classes, you may recognize, but of course here we are learning the origin. We're going back to the source of it all. When you learn Gemara, you're not learning the Gemara in order to know what to do. For this you should learn the Shulchan Aruch. We are learning the Gemara so that we understand the profundity and the jurisprudence behind the Halacha. That's the reason we learn Gemara. Okay? So we're not paskening Halachas here. And I will introduce you to various different opinions and various different ideas, as you will see. When we have a better understanding of the background of the jurisprudence behind these halachas, then the halacha, the world of halacha, becomes different also. The earliest documentation, bar none, of Jewish law is to be found in the Mishnah. This is the basic rubric, the foundation of all halacha, of all practical oral Torah, which tells us what to do and what not to do, will be found in the Mishnah. And so, when we're learning about the Seder, we're learning about the Passover Seder in the Mishnah, we're going back to the very earliest sources, and you'll be able to trace and see how some of the halachas and the minhagim, the customs and laws that we observe today at our Seder, actually are rooted in the words of the Mishnah. But anyway, let's do less talking and more learning. So I direct all of your attentions to the Mishnah, and the Mishnah is going to pick up the narrative of the night of the Seder, not the story, but the narrative of what is supposed to be done. The Mishnah picks up this narrative after the first cup has been drunk, which means the Kiddush has been recited, and we have finished drinking that first cup, which, as we've learned in many of our classes, comprises one of the four cups. And in previous Gemara classes, we talked about the obligation to drink four cups and what that's all about. So now, after having drunk and finished the first cup, we're going to get ready to pour the second glass. But the second glass is not poured immediately. First, there is a little bit of activity, a couple of things that we do. This Mishnah is extremely cryptic, I should warn you. It's like we get like 3 words out of 10. We have to like figure out, put the sentence together. Hey, viu lefanov. The Mishnah uses just 2 words. They've brought before him. But it doesn't say what we brought before him. And the truth, my friends, is it doesn't say what's brought before him, because there really is no halacha for what exactly is brought before him. As you'll see, the difference between the first half of the Mishnah and the second half of the Mishnah, as Rabbeinu David explains it, is that in the first half of the Mishnah, the details are not spelled out. We don't talk about what exactly is brought, whereas in the second half of the Mishnah, the details will be spelled out. And the difference will be obvious. The first half, it doesn't matter what exactly you eat. It's not a mitzvah consumption. It's not one of the mitzvahs of the night of the Seder. The second half, we talk about actual mitzvah items, with the possible exception of one of the items, as we will soon see. Now, in your Passover Seder, the first thing you do is Kaddish. The first thing you do is you make Kiddush. That's done. We're now up to the next thing, which is Urchatz. We wash our hands without a bracha. And then we're going to eat a little vegetable, and we're going to be dipping it into salt water or vinegar, right? That's what happens. So the Mishnah is giving us the origin, the root source of all of this halacha. Heviu lefanov, after that first cup is completed, they brought before him. Doesn't say what. Metabel b'chazeres. The Mishnah says they bring before him, and then the Mishnah goes on to speak about to dip, it seems to dip, b'chazeres, in the special leaf or green leaf, which is known as the bitter herbs, the mur. So what's going on over here? Let's take a look in Rashi. Heviu lefanav. What did they bring before him? Doesn't say what. Rashi says, yirakot, vegetables. What kind of vegetable? That doesn't really make a difference what kind of vegetable. The point is not what kind of vegetable, because the vegetable that's going to be eaten now is not being eaten for the sake of it being eaten. It is but a decoy, a diversion. The eating of that vegetable only gives us a pretext or allows the questions to be asked and posed, as we will soon see in a moment. which is rather unusual, because usually in halacha we get things to do. We get detailed instructions. Here's what you should eat. Here's when you should eat it. Here's how you should eat it. Maybe you'll even get it. Here's why you should eat it. Here we're just getting like this vague thing. Okay, finish the first cup. So you bring in front of him. And before we are going to begin with the actual Seder and perform the mitzvahs, next mitzvah of tonight is going to be the mitzvah of Vihigadata Levincha, the mitzvah of relating, telling the story to our children. So before we do the mitzvah, we do other things, which is rather odd. Why would we do other things before doing the mitzvah? You have a mitzvah to do. Instead you do narishkeit, instead you do niceties, instead you do decoys. You have a mitzvah to do. Okay, fine, there's a rabbinic mitzvah that this night should be punctuated with the consumption or drinking of 4 cups of wine. So you're going to start the meal off. You have to make kiddush. It's a biblical mitzvah to make kiddush. The rabbis ordained that the mitzvah of kiddush should be made over a glass of wine. It's only logical, it makes sense that if you can drink 4 cups of wine, the first of those cups is going to be the kiddush cup. Fine, drink your kiddush cup. Now we should do the mitzvah. What's the next mitzvah of tonight? Telling the story. And then after that, what's the next mitzvah? Eating the matzah. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, Bar and Matzah together with Karban Pesach. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash. We fulfill that mitzvah rabbinically. But that's the mitzvahs at hand. We should do the mitzvahs. Instead, first we're going to bring some vegetables. We're going to dip the vegetables. Then, by the way, we're going to break the bread. And after we break the bread, then the children are going to ask questions. And then we're going to start to fulfill our mitzvah. What's going on over here? You have a mitzvah to do, do your mitzvah. Do you know that according to the halacha, you're not even allowed to delay the performance of a mitzvah? If you have a mitzvah to do, you're not supposed to do anything else until you do that mitzvah? Did you know that? So, we don't always do that though. And I'll give you maybe the most famous, the best example of when we don't do a mitzvah, a biblical mitzvah, a very important biblical mitzvah, and we don't do it right away. Some people will tell you it's the most important day of the year. Rosh Hashanah. Mitzvah is blowing the shofar. And yet, when do we blow the shofar? Really, at like midpoint in the service or towards the second half of it. We usually blow the shofar like, after Shacharis, which is very long, and after the Torah gets read, and the Haftorah, and then we blow the shofar. Why? Why do we do it that way? I'll ask you a better question. You have a mitzvah to read the Shema every single day. So why don't you get up in the morning and read the Shema? No, instead we get up in the morning, and if you're a Hasidic Shiite, you're going to learn a little Torah. And then after you learn a little Torah, then you're going to say Pesukah DeZimra. First you have to feel HaShachar, the opening preamble to prayers, and then you go through the verses of praise, and then after the verses of praise, you go through your Shtabach, and you have Birchas Krishma, and then, about an hour after you started your Avodas Hashem, you get to Krishma. Why? The answer is, because we want these mitzvahs to be performed in a meaningful fashion. And the reality is that the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, for example, which represents Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shamayim, it's not going to be done in a mindful and a heartfelt way if you still taste the toothpaste. You just woke up. But if you prepare and you get ready, it's a Kriya Shema, it's a Kriya Shema. And if the Kriya Shema is a Kriya Shema, your next mitzvah, which is the mitzvah of prayer, your tefillah is a tefillah. And Rosh Hashanah, you're just going to get up in the morning and blow the shofar? Like, that's all? You want, this is the mitzvah of the year. This is the Kabbalat O Malchus Shamayim, accepting God as sovereign. It's a big deal. So Imru Fanim Malchus, we say all kinds of verses of praise and we do all kinds of davening, we read from his Torah and we get inspired, and then we read verses before and then we finally blow the shofar. So in order for us to be able to perform this mitzvah, Vigadta Levincha, we have to prepare. Now there's a little bit of a difference. In the two examples that I gave you, the activities, the preamble, makes it more meaningful. Which is not only on a level of like emotion or passion, which is an important part of our observance of Hashem, the Ahava V'Yira, we should serve Hashem with reverence and with love. But here it goes further. Here it's actually a halacha consideration. Let me give you the most extreme example of this. In the Shailos HaTshuvos HaRosh, Rabbeinu Osher had a question. And the question that he was asked, the Rosh is one of the great Rishonim. Right? It's like going back well over 500 years. So the Rosh gets this question. Lama in Mavarchin al Sipur HaGadah? Why don't we make a bracha? He says. If telling the story of the Haggadah is a mitzvah, why don't we make a bracha? So the Rosh says that there's a lot of things So a lot of things that are commanded by Hashem for a zecher li Yetzias Mitzrayim. We should remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. Ve'inanu mevarchem aleihem. We don't make a bracha on zecher li Yetzias Mitzrayim, that we should remember going out of Egypt. Like, for example, the idea of the Bechorot, the firstborn, whether it's firstborn human or firstborn animal or even firstborn donkey, a special mitzvah. We don't say we're doing this and then make a bracha to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim, even though the Torah explicitly says, Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, remember Mitzrayim. He says, the Mayadim, all the festivals, are all Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. He says, the reason we don't do that is because we do what Hashem told us to do. And what does it cause? It causes us to remember Mitzrayim. Meaning, the remembering of Mitzrayim, this is the cause. The cause is not the mitzvah, like the Rambam says in Sefer HaMitzvahs. The cause of what happens as a result of doing the mitzvah is not the mitzvah. That's what's engendered by the mitzvah. What's the mitzvah? The mitzvah is do what you got to do. So he says, as a result of all this, we'll remember the going out of Mitzrayim. But that doesn't really answer the question. Doesn't answer the question, because isn't there a mitzvah to verbalize? The mitzvah to verbalize tonight. It's not just a mitzvah for us to have a remembrance of Yetzias Mitzrayim. You're supposed to actually talk about it. So the Rosh says something like shocking. He says, no. When it says v'igadata, it doesn't necessarily mean hagada bepeh. It doesn't mean you have to verbalize it. What do you mean? It says v'igadata levincha. Ki yisholcha vincha, your child will say v'igadata levincha, you're going to respond. So the Rosh says something unbelievable. He says, is no mitzvah to say it? Ela im yishoel mafrishin lo. If the child asks, then you have to respond to him. Now, this is a minority opinion. The vast majority of Rishonim do not agree with the Rosh. The vast majority of Rishonim will tell you that in the night of Pesach, when we are going to be relating the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, even if we weren't asked, we would still be performing a mitzvah. However, the Rosh is an important Rishon. So from the Rosh's perspective, if we don't get the kids to ask the question, we don't do the mitzvah biblically. We're only having a rabbinic mitzvah. You want to get the biblical mitzvah and get the kids to ask the question. And even if you are to say that we don't follow the opinion of the Rosh, and even if we are to believe that regardless of whether we get the question or don't get the question, it's our job to verbalize and to speak about the going out of Mitzrayim. Incidentally, the Gemara later says, what happens if there's no kids? So the Gemara says, ask yourself, talk to yourself. So the Rosh would tell you that that's only a rabbinic mitzvah. It's not a biblical mitzvah. That's what the Mefarshim, I mean, they asked this question. That's the Chido asked the question. How could the Rosh say it's not a mitzvah? Only when the child asks. The Gemara itself says, ask yourself. Ask amongst each other. There's no children. The Gemara itself says that. So the Chido says, yeah, the Rosh would tell you that's only a rabbinic mitzvah. It's not a biblical mitzvah. But whether we follow that opinion of the Rosh, which is a very extreme opinion or not, the point that's being conveyed to us is the ideal way to do this mitzvah, and this everybody would agree with, is that there should be a give and take. That the verbalization should be an answer, a response to a question that was asked. Somebody asked a question, somebody responded to the question. Now, because this is the case, we sit down at our Seder, if we just go through the motions and just start reading the Haggadah, according to the Rosh, we didn't even have a biblical mitzvah. According to the other opinions, you may have fulfilled a biblical mitzvah, but certainly not in a meticulous way. Why not? Because nobody asked any questions. So therefore, before we go on to the next mitzvah, what is the first order of business? What's the most important thing for us to do? Get somebody to ask a question. We need to provoke questions now. That's what precipitates the proper performance of this mitzvah. So we're not going to go first to our mitzvah of Igadat Levincha. We're not going to start reciting the Haggadah right after Kiddush and performing the first mitzvah of drinking the first four cups of wine. What are we going to do? We're going to stimulate questions. And we're also going to be bringing different items, because the Haggadah is best recited over, like, show and tell. Like when you have, here's the matzah. Matzah zu shana, here's the matzah. Murr zu, this is the murr, and so on and so forth. So when we have Pesach Matzah Murr, we have examples. So, you know, we talk about the cement, you say, yep, here's the cement, here's the charosis, an example. Which is, in today's day and age, this is what education is all about. Engaging the kids. How do you engage them? and many sensories, many levels. You sing, you storytell, you role play, you have props, you have examples. Here's what it is. Why is the matzah called lechem oini, poor man's bread? So according to some opinion, the poor man's bread, because that's what poor people eat. Because a little bit of matzah lasts a long time in your stomach. You get your money's worth. Some people say when you finish paying for the matzah, you're poor. I'm just joking. That's not enough. But lechem sha'oinim, sha'oinim alav dvarim harbe. It's the bread we speak over. This is an actual example of what's been eaten for thousands of years, year after year. Show to the children this. See, this matzah. Here's the matzah. This is a dynamic event. So this dynamic event where the children see and feel and touch and taste and sing and hear stories, you engage them, so to speak, on every level. So this is what this Mishnah is about. This Mishnah is, hevi'u lefanav, you're going to bring it before them. So now we're going to do this mitzvah. This mitzvah has to be done in a special fashion. So the Mishnah is going to talk about how we are going to precipitate, provoke questions, how we are going to make the Seder experience, the mitzvah of telling the story, a more compelling and a more profound and a more impactful event. That's what it's about. Incidentally, since we have mentioned the Rosh and we talked about the subject of why it is that we're doing what we're doing and how there's a special mitzvah tonight of telling the story, so the famous question can and should be asked. Is there a difference between remembering Mitzrayim, Yetzias Mitzrayim all year, and a difference between the remembrance of the night of Pesach? Is there a difference? So the Rebbe says there actually are no less than 6 differences. And I'll go through a quick digest of them just because we're on the subject. So he says, the Rebbe says, every single day, what's necessary is for us to remember it in our hearts. You don't have to say anything. And therefore, if a person meditates, contemplates this, that's sufficient. And the Rebbe brings a whole bunch of sources for that. Then the Rebbe said, on a regular basis, it's enough to remember it for a moment. Zechira, mitzvah lahazkir. Remember, we mentioned it. You know, there's a silly little joke that makes this point where the executor called the whole family together and he's reading the will. And the guy says, so, to my dear wife, I leave you the mansion and the condo in Florida. To my cousin, I leave you my yacht. I leave, you know. And then finally at the end, and to my nephew, Maury, who always asked if he would be in the will, hello, Maury. You just got mentioned. You don't even get anything, right? So a whole year you mention it. It's nice. Thanks for the honorable mention. You mention me, that's good enough. You don't actually have to have a role to play. You don't have to do anything about it. But the Rebbe says on the night of Mitzrayim, and the night of Pesach, it's not enough just to mention Lahazker. On Pesach, there has to be Sipur. Sipur is a story. Stories are different. And of course, that means that we have to tell the story of the miracle. And we have to go back to the very beginning and say Avodah Mayinu. And in the beginning, Maschal B'Gnus, we weren't all so hotsy-totsy and perfect. We started off in a very low ebb. We develop a story. You have to develop a narrative. There's a fill-in-the-story line. Number 3, the Rebbe brings down this Rush. And he says, we have a Rush that says that you have to actually respond to a question. Or you don't even fill the mitzvah. The mentioning is not even a mitzvah. So that's very different. A whole year, you don't say to the kids in the morning, hey, you have anything to ask today? Kids look at you like you're crazy, no? Come on, you can ask something? What should we ask? And then you say, oh, you asked, thank God. Now let's talk about Mitzrayim. A whole year, you don't do that. But in the night of Pesach, we do. So that's the third difference. A fourth difference is, the Rebbe says that just remembering Mitzrayim is not actually counted as one of the 613 mitzvahs. Here it is counted as one of the 613 mitzvahs. It's a big difference. Which, of course, really is the question of the Rosh. That was the question he asked him. So why do we make a bracha on it? And the Rosh has a different approach to the whole thing. Number 5, the Rebbe says that the mention of Mitzrayim that we do on a daily basis will come to an end, or Mashiach will come. However, at least according to the opinion of Ben Zoyma. And according to Ben Zoyma, when Mashiach will come, we will still be telling the story of the Exodus on the night of Pesach. And last but not least, on the 6th night, the mitzvah is to keep telling the story. So a person said, okay, I already read the Haggadah. I already read a page. Can we eat now? He said, no, we're doing 2 pages, 5 pages, 10 pages. Are we done yet? The more you talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim on the night of Pesach, the more it's meaningful. Whereas when it comes to the other mitzvah of Zechira, Yetzias Mitzrayim, once you mentioned, once you remembered, done. You mentioned. You're finished. Anyway, what is clear from here is that one of the major differences between telling the story every other night and the notion of the night of Pesach is that in the night of Pesach it is performed in a manner of give and take. It's performed in a manner of provoking a question, and that it has to be a better story. So in order for it to be a better story, if you want to tell a story, you need to have props. You need to have something that you can have visuals, especially in today's day and age. People need visuals, right? People need screens for everything. Well, you can't have screens. It's Yom Tov, so that's not going to work. So you need visuals. So we had visuals long before virtual reality was talked about over the whiteboards in classrooms. Visuals, we have to tell the story, and we have to continue to harp on and emphasize the story. So that's what this Mishnah is about. So the Mishnah begins very, like, vaguely. Hiviyu lefanav. They brought. What did they bring? Right? It says, metal bechazeres. So Rashi says, why do we use metal bechazeres? Rashi says, this is Lashon HaGemara. That's the language the Gemara uses. As we learned earlier, Hashamesh metavel, the Shabbos dips of Nevaim. Because all of the food that they used to eat once upon a time was with dips. It's not that different today. People like to dip a lot, do a lot of dipping. Netabo bechazeres, Rashi says, means kolaymer. Imein shom yerek acher metabo lechazeres bechareses fa'ichu. This is how Rashi explains this. He's talking about chazeres. Chazeres is the bitter herbs. Why are we talking about bitter herbs now? The bitter herbs only come after the eating of matzah. As it says, al matzot umirorim. First comes the matzah, then afterwards comes the maror. Why are we talking about chazeres here? So Rashi says, chazeret, or the vegetable, this is a final option. When there is no other choice, we use chazeret. So the assumption is that if people are sitting there around a seder, the assumption, the hope is we got the basics covered. What does that mean? You got wine on the table, you got matzah on the table, you have bitter herbs on the table. I hope you have some charosa too. What if I don't have karpas? What if I don't have any celery? Well, you don't have celery, you don't have celery. You have to have maror, right? So if there's no other choice, then we're going to eat a little bit of vegetable, and we'll make sure we dip that little bit of vegetable, and then we'll move on to preparing for the Seder. In other words, from Rashi's perspective, the reason that the Mishnah speaks in such a vague and cryptic fashion is because the Mishnah is giving you only the worst case scenario. Ideally, Hivyu Lofana should be Yerokis, other kinds of green. And as we've mentioned many times, the green should be the kind of greenery, the kind of vegetable which is eaten raw. And of course, we make the bracha of Ha'adama, like we learn in Shulchan Aruch, and that later takes the place of the Ha'adama on the maror, because it's a question if the maror has to have a hadama made on it. But point being here is that we're going to do something which is diversionary. We're doing something different. And because we're doing something different, it's going to cause the children to ask a question. Why is it causing them to ask a question? Very simple. You made Kiddush. What do we do on a regular night? Regular Friday night. You make Kiddush. What do we do next? We eat. It's late. Let's eat. No, we're not eating now. What are you eating now? We're going to nibble now. What are we nibbling? Maror? Okay, no maror. Celery, karpas. So we're nibbling something, but this nibble is done purposefully in order to get the children to ask the question. Something's being done different. We don't usually nibble vegetables now. Now is when we eat. We start the meal by breaking bread. That's even the euphemism. That's how people talk. We're going to break bread. You break bread, then you eat. And here we're doing all of a sudden nibbles. It's not like these are pass-arounds, you know, hors d'oeuvres, like in the hallway. We're sitting at the table. We made Kiddush. There's something that happens all the time. So that's how the Mishnah opens this up. So Hiviyu Lefanav, they bring it in front of him. The children, of course, are going to be asked a question. And then when the children ask a question, we're going to be able to fulfill our mitzvah, which is the mitzvah of Igarat Olavincha. Metabo bechazeres ad shemagia leparperas hapas. Once again, very, very vague here. So you metabo bechazeres, and the metibo bechazeres is going to be until you bring the parperes of the pas. What does this mean? So the parperes of the pas means until we come to the rest of the preambles to the meal. Because even when we eat matzah, we're actually not a meal. It's a mitzvah eating. It's no mitzvah to eat challah. You don't have to eat a certain amount of challah. You can nibble the challah and eat other things. So here is a mitzvah to eat matzah. And then after we eat the matzah, what do we eat? We eat the maror. And then only later are we going to eat. So this is the beginning of a process. And this is indicates this halacha that we've talked about. Make the Borei Pri Adamah, you have to have in mind the mar, which is going to be eaten later. So this is the beginning of a process, ad until that he comes to Parperes HaPas. So what is the meaning of the notion of Parperes HaPas? So according to many opinions, Parperes HaPas means something which whets your appetite. Just like, for example, we have a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that says that Tkufis Gematria is Parperois LaChachma, that various gematria, mathematical equations, and the astrology, it's all interesting stuff, astronomy, pardon me, but it just whets your appetite to learn the real wisdom. Like, people like to learn about the zodiac and wacky stuff, so that's really cute, but really, like, sure, learn, let's learn some real Torah. Like, after you got people's attention, after you drew them in, now you learn them some real things. So this parperes means something which is going to wet, and here, the little bit of vegetable we eat serves to whet our appetite. There is another whole different opinion that Parperes HaPas is speaking about matzah, and the reason that it's called Parperes is because it's paper thin. It's like a wafer. And because it's like a wafer, it's called Parperes HaPas. It's not regular pot, it's not regular bread, it's like wafer bread. It's like cracker bread. Of course, Rabbeinu David and others ask, that's fine for our matzah, but there are other communities, like the Yemenite community, that ate thick matzah. And in theory, the matzah doesn't have to be thin. The matzah could be thick too. So it doesn't exactly work. Unless we are to say that the author of the Mishnah already ruled out eating that matzah, that would be a very big chiddush to say. At any rate, the point is, this is what we're going to be doing. This is the last little eating. There's not going to be a lot of eating going on, though. There's going to be a little eating, a little nibble, and that's it. That's it. What are we going to do after this little nibble? We're going to tell the story. That's our next mitzvah. We're not going to be doing any other eating. So we bring the yurakis, we bring a little bit of vegetable, we're going to do this little bit of dipping, and then we're going to tell the story. Ah, this is the last eating until we get to Parperes HaPas. Now there is a machlekes of the Shoinim. What is the issue? What provokes the question? Is it the fact that we dip only once, or the fact that we dip twice? So Rashi and Rashbam seem to say, well, the fact that we dip once, we only dip once. Then you ask the Manashtana. But Rabbeinu David says, in the Manashtana, it says you dip twice. Of course, you'll ask, we didn't do that yet. Ah, that's true. But the child saw you brought the charoses to the table. So he knows another dipping is on the way because you brought a dip to the table. So there's one dip, and he saw the dip, and now he sees another dip. He says, oh, my, we're dipping vegetables all night tonight. First, we're dipping vegetables in salt water. Then we're going to be dipping vegetables later on in the charoset, sweet and sour. He says, okay, what's going on here with the dips? Why are you emphasizing this dip before and dip later? So this is the question of what exactly provokes and incites the interest and the curiosity of the child so that the child will actually ask and say, what's going on here tonight? Talk to me. Explain this to me. I don't know why we're doing this. So this is how the Mishnah unfolds. The Mishnah says, Heviyu Lufanov. Now, one more thing I want to point out to you, the word Heviyu Lufanov, according to Rashi and Rashbam and other Rishonim, the idea of Heviyu is bringing the actual time of the Mishnah, they would bring the vegetable at this point. They would bring the karpas to the table. But according to the Tosfos and many of the other Rishonim, Ben Yochanan and many others, they didn't actually sit at a table like our table. This is more of a European concept, a table like this. In the Middle East, once upon a time, when they had mealtime, they sat like on these couches. And they had little tables in front of them. And these little tables, everybody had their own little table. So in the beginning, they made Kiddush. They made the Kiddush without a table. You don't need a table for Kiddush. They had a glass of wine. Then they finished with a glass of wine. They set the glass of wine aside. And then the table was brought. How do we do that today? Just about everybody eats at tables today. How do we do it? So we actually prepare the whole Seder plate before. But then we finish with the Seder plate. We, at some point, push the Seder plate away or draw it close. You're making Kiddush. You don't make Kiddush on top of the Seder plate. The Seder plate's a little bit moved. And then what happens is now you put the cup down, you bring the Seder plate close. That's when you're going to do the business of the karpas. Then you're going to open them, take the matzah, break the matzah. And then after that, Misalkin is a kaida, it says, we push away the Seder plate. By pushing the matzah away, it's like removing the table in antiquity. And then the child says, hey, we didn't even eat anything. And now you're pushing the food away? This doesn't make any sense. Excellent. I was hoping you'd ask. And then it says, Manashtana. Then we start to speak to the child and explain to him exactly what's unfolding, what's happening. So hiviu lufanov, whether it's vegetables or the table with all those vegetables, metavu bechazeres, we should dip something, even if it means dipping the maror. But the maror is not going to be dipped for the sake of maror. The maror will be dipped for the sake of curiosity, piquing curiosity, just making everybody think, oh, what's going on here? And then, atcha magila beperes hapas, until we reach, maybe the maror, maybe the matzah, but until we reach the final hors d'oeuvres, the final preparation for the actual meal, which Shulchan Aruch takes place only after we do those mitzvahs. So heviyu lefanav, then what's brought in front is matzah, v'chazeres, v'chareises, matzah. Doesn't say how many matzahs. It says matzah. There is a school of thought espoused by the Vilna Gaon. How many matzahs should we take? He says two matzahs. Two challahs, two matzahs. He doesn't subscribe to the whole idea. He was very original, very creative. He said, I don't know. Where's that from? The Gemara doesn't say three matzahs. The Mishnah, the Medrash doesn't say three matzahs. It's a matzah, so bring matzah. Really, it says matzah, it's a matzah. But you have to have a Lecha Mishnah, bring two matzahs. Very few people follow this. It's universal, just about universal. Everybody brings three matzahs. And there's a reason for the three matzahs. What's the reason for the three matzahs? Because you have to have two whole matzahs to make a bracha of hamotzi, and two whole matzahs. But you also have to break a matzah. Why? Because lechemoni, real bread of affliction, is not a whole matzah, but rather a broken matzah. What would the Vilna Gaon answer you? He would say to you, there's nothing as broken, as whole as a broken heart. On the night of Pesach, broken matzah is like whole. That's what it is. That's how it's supposed to be. Anyway, but that's not the point. My point to you is that this is all discussed later in the Rishonim and Acharonim, and then we have our minhagim, what we follow, and you should do the minhagim that you follow. But in the Mishnah, it doesn't say how many matzahs you bring. This is all fleshed in at a later time. What it does say is matzah has to be brought. This is one of the specimens. Matzah is on the table. And then what else do we bring? Chazeres. What's chazeres? For lack of better terminology, we're going to call it romaine lettuce. Certain lettuce which is used specifically for the purpose of maror. What else should we bring? Charoses. Wow, charoses. Sounds like charoses is a really important player here. And shnei tafshilin, two items which are cooked. Why do we bring two items which are cooked? So the Gemara is going to explain all of this. But of course, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, what did we have on the Seder plate? We had a piece of Korban Pesach and a piece of the Korban Chagiga. That's what we have corresponding. We have these two tafshilin that correspond to this Korbanot. So that's why we have matzah, we have chazeres, we have chareises, and we have two tafshilin. What do we have on our Seder plate today? Exactly this. We have matzah. We follow the tradition of the Arizal, which the matzah represents the keli, or the vessel, that the different kinds represent the or, or the energy which is manifest in the vessel. So therefore, according to our tradition, we place the items on top of the matzah. Others Shainim had this idea, you put the matzah on one side and you arrange the items on another side. There's different schools of thought, different opinions, different approaches. And the point is, what do we have on our Seder plate? We have a karpas, which we're going to use. We have a moror. We have an additional moror because we're going to eat it with a sandwich later, but that's a whole other story, what's up with the korach business. And we have charoses. We have the egg. We have the shank bone. This is the two tafshilin. This is exactly, we're reading a Mishnah that's 2,000 years old. It's exactly what we do today. Nothing's changed. So you're going to say, well, in some communities, the items are on the side. In some communities, they're on the front. Yes, okay, fine. The different customs developed. But the bare bones, this is what it is. You veal the fun of this is what you have. You have the vegetable, you have the maror, you have the matzah, you have your two tafshil and your two cooked items, and you have your charoses. 2,000 years old. Older than everybody else's Bibles. This is the oral tradition. That's how people are doing Pesach all this time. Now, here's the interesting thing. All of the items that we have discussed are mitzvah items. The two tafshilin represent two mitzvahs. Okay, then we don't have the mitzvah, at least representing the mitzvah. The matzah is a mitzvah. The maror is a rabbinic mitzvah tonight. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, a biblical mitzvah. It's charoses. I know why I'm bringing the karpas. The rush tells me, what do you mean, why? I have to have a biblical mitzvah. I need that karpas. Okay, fine. So the Gemara, the Mishnah says, I want you to know, afal pi she'en charosis mitzvah, even though the charosis in and of itself is not a mitzvah, there is no mitzvah to eat charosis. But why am I bringing it then? So Rashi says, hold your horses. L'kaman parach. The Gemara is going to ask later, ha'il v'lav mitzvah, amai ma'isila. If there's no mitzvah to eat charosis, why are you bringing it for? Gemara's going to talk about it. Patience, we'll get there. The Gemara is going to discuss this. But the first thing we hear is that the charosis is an important ingredient, a part of the Seder table. And when you set up your Seder plate, or as talked about in the Mishnah, your Seder table, which was like a little table. So that's what you had. We have a big table with a little plate. They had a table. So you set up your Seder table, you need to have all these items. The Mishnah says, you should know, Rabbi Eliezer ben Tzadok Emir, Rabbi Eliezer says, it is a mitzvah. Mitzvah. It is a mitzvah, he says. He says eating charosis on the night of Pesach is actually a mitzvah. Well, but Migdash, the Mishnah adds, the Mishnah is written after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. It's only redacted 200 years later. So if you want to get spar with me and tell me it's only 18 centuries old, I can't argue with you. The Mishnah comes along and says that in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, Hayu Mevi'in Lefan of Gufi Shel Pesach, they would bring an actual Korban Pesach. The actual body of the Korban Pesach, the actual meat, would be brought before him. So with regard to the charosis being a mitzvah, the Rambam, in Pirush HaMishnayos, he says that according to the opinion of Rabbi Lazar, it is actually a mitzvah to eat charosis on Pesach, Pesach night. And the Rambam says, in Pirush HaMishnayos, that according to Rabbi Lazar Bar Tzadik, they would make a bracha, asher kedishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivonu al achilat charosat. Funny thing is, though, that in the Mishnah Torah, which is the Rambam's a much later iteration, which is written in Halacha, it seems very clear that even according to the opinion of Rabbi Lezer ben Tzadok, you wouldn't make a bracha when you ate the charosis. So the Meiri, he says that clearly the Rambam changed his mind. There are a number of things that the Rambam ruled, he paskened a certain way in his youth, and later when he was older and more mature, he ruled otherwise. And we always follow the later ruling. So if you had a great sage like the Rambam, he ruled one way, and then he ruled otherwise. We always follow the later ruling. There are a number of instances. It's called a Mishnah Shniyah, a second approach. Second approach. The sage is older, more mature, more deep and profound, came to a different conclusion. So the point, of course, I'm trying to make is that this business, according to Elazar ben Tzadok, it really is a mitzvah. So serious that there's even a discussion of whether or not a bracha should be recited over it. Although, we don't, that's not the halacha. The halacha is not like Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok. And of course, you could ask the question, if the halacha is not like Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok, why do we even bring him in the Mishnah? So this the Gemara tells us. The Gemara tells us that anything which somebody might have thought is a compelling idea, the Mishnah will bring it. Say, yes, we thought about that. You're not the first one to think about it. It's been discussed. It's not the halacha. It's one of the reasons we bring different opinions. Another reason we bring different opinions is we should understand the full jurisprudence, the full discussion, since it wasn't clear. We had to work this out. So there is even an opinion that says that the charosis in and of itself is a mitzvah. However, this the idea of the charosis, even if it's a mitzvah, you wouldn't recite a bracha over it. Now, there is the opinion of Rabbeinu Manoach who says, he asked the question, so if it's really a mitzvah, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok, why wouldn't you make a bracha? Why would the Rambam say not to make a bracha later? And he says, when you make a bracha on Sukkot, on the four kinds, what are the four kinds? A lulav, an esrog, hadasma, and aravis. Four kinds, right? Palm branch, the citron, the myrtle, and the willow. What bracha do you make? Asher kedishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivonu al netilat lulav. Why? Because that's most prominent. That's most visible. That's what you see. So everything else becomes kind of secondary. It's called Ikar and Tafel. There's the primary and the secondary. So what do we focus on? We make a bracha, we focus on the primary. It's an interesting halacha when it comes to the concept of making a bracha on food, that if you have multiple blessings in the bowl in front of you, so if the details, if the part of the food is just there as a detail, I mean, you're not eating it. If somebody sits down to eat rice and there are, you know, little olives chopped up in the rice, they say, what are you eating? What does he tell you? A bowl of olives? A bowl of rice. So what bracha do you make? Rice. Whatever bracha you make on the rice. That's another question altogether. But that's cereal and milk. What bracha do you make? Cereal. On the cereal. It's mizonos or shahakal, depending on what cereal, or hadama, depending on what cereal it is. Why don't you make a bracha on the milk? Because nobody sits down and says, I'm not a cat. I didn't sit down to eat a bowl of milk. I sat down to eat a bowl of cereal. But why is there milk? You try to eat dry cereal. It's no fun, right? So it makes it a little more interesting. But that's all, it's a tuffle. So we have this idea that Ben Menoch then says, when it comes to the concept of charoisis, even if it's a mitzvah charoisis, even, the charoisis would not be a mitzvah in and of itself. The charoisis, the mitzvah charoisis would be to eat it together with the maror. So we hold it's not a mitzvah, it's appropriate. Gemara is going to talk about this. But even Rabbi Eliezer Bar Tzadik, who said that eating charoisis is a mitzvah, he still says it's a mitzvah as a tuffel. It's a mitzvah in secondary fashion, though. It's only a mitzvah as a tuffel to the eating of the maror, and that's why no bracha would actually be recited over it. So we now have the Mishnah introducing us to the second cup. We didn't pour the second cup yet. The real question is going to come for the child when we pour the second cup. Because the child thinks we're playing games over here. We're nibbling, we're noshing, we're breaking the bread. Okay, we're eating. And then when the child sees you push this away, you have all these items, and all of a sudden we're pouring a second glass of wine, here he says, this is too much. I can't take this anymore. What in heaven is going on? So really, if somebody will ask what we learned about tonight, we learned the Mishnah that precipitates the second cup. We're not up to the second cup yet. But the only way that the second cup will be most effective, and the second cup, of course, is the cup we recite the Haggadah over. We recite Haggadah over a glass, because part of the meaning of Haggadah is not only telling a story, but also singing Hashem's praises. And how do you sing Hashem's praises? Over a glass of wine. So before we pour the second glass of wine to sing Hashem's praises, we do all kinds of things to ensure that we will get a question from the child. And once we ensure we get that question, then we're off to the races. Got the question, phew, the kid finally asked. Then we can respond and go ahead. Incidentally, it is true that little children will learn in school, and parents might even tell them that there's a manashtana to say, and they even learn the manashtana by heart. The whole thing is kind of choreographed, right? That's true, but there is a point at a certain that child's life where the child actually does ask the question. There is a time. And even according to the Rosh, once the child asks, you're responsible to answer. Whether he was propped or prepped or put up to it, it doesn't make a difference. Once the question is asked, we have to answer. And certainly according to the other Dishayin, that the mitzvah is not only when the child asks, certainly it's appropriate that this should be a give and take. The fact is the child's part of the event. It's not a monologue. He's not just sitting there. He's not just getting ideas thrown at him. The child is actively engaged. He's an important part of the Seder. He doesn't have to have a part where they say children should be seen, not heard. Wrong, not the Jewish way. Children should be seen, heard, and participating. And when we have a participatory role from the parents and the children, when it's a family event that the Seder, everybody's doing together, this is the effective way for us to be able to convey and communicate the beauty, the pageantry, and the majesty of our eternal tradition that goes back from the very beginning of our peoplehood, Yetziyah Mimitzrayim. And that, my friends, is what we'll do for tonight. Be'ezrat Hashem, next week we will continue to begin to analyze this Mishnah through the prism of the Gemara.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Poor Chava, go get some.